An heiress to a large US communications empire was kidnapped in the 70s, but somehow, despite being their victim, she joined the group that kidnapped her, supporting their ideologies and later committing crimes alongside them. This is the story of Patty Hearst. Patricia Campbell Hearst, called Patty by her family, was born on February 20th, 1954 in San Francisco, California. She was the daughter of Randolph Apperson Hearst and Catherine Wood Campbell. When these events happened, she was 19 years old and a student at the University of Berkeley in Northern California. Patty was very wealthy. Her paternal grandfather had bequeathed an immense estate to her family. William Hearst was an American businessman, newspaper publisher, and politician. He had built the largest newspaper network of the time, Hearst Communications, founded at the end of the 19th century and which still exists today. A few days before she turned 20, on February 4th, 1974, Patty was with her fiancé, Stephen Weed, at his house, when someone knocked on the door in the middle of the night. As it was late, Stephen opened it just a little to see who it was. Outside, a girl asked for help, saying her car had crashed and she needed to use a phone. Stephen barely had time to think as soon several people appeared behind her, broke down the door and entered the house shouting. The kidnappers pointed a gun at Patty's head and ordered her to leave with them. Her boyfriend was not injured, and he immediately informed the family of what had happened. The criminals were members of the SLA, Symbionese Liberation Army, which was a group of guerrillas who sought the downfall of the corporate dictatorship of President Richard Nixon's government. The SLA believed that due to the influence and financial status of the Hearst family, they controlled the United States government at the time, and thus, through it, the SLA would make their demands. In captivity, one of the kidnappers, Donald DeFries, also known by the nickname Cinque, explained to Patty who they were and what they wanted. "You are a prisoner of war. We will negotiate your release for two of our comrades who are imprisoned and being tortured by this fascist prison system of America." She was blindfolded all the time, while eating, going to the bathroom, and taking a shower. They didn't hurt her in any way, but she could never see her kidnappers. 2 days after the kidnapping, February 6th, demands were made through a letter from SLA sent to a local radio station, 94.1 KPFK FM. Despite the influence they thought the family had, the government would not agree to the request for the release of the group's members. 6 days later, on February 12th, a second communique was sent, but this time by an audio tape recording of Patty herself and Donald DeFries.
"Before any form of negotiation for the release of the subject prisoner be initiated, that an action of good faith be shown on the part of the Hearst family. This gesture is to be in the form of food to the needy and the unemployed."
Donald explained several things, but in short, his demand was that $70 worth of food must be donated to every poor person in the state of California.
"Mom, Dad, I'm okay. I had a few scrapes and stuff, but they've washed them up and they're getting okay, and I've caught a cold, but they're giving me pills for it, and so I'm not being starved or beaten, or there's no way that I will be released until they let me go. So it wouldn't do any good for somebody to come in here and try to get me out by force. These people aren't just a bunch of nuts, and they've been really honest with me, but they're perfectly willing to die for what they're doing, and I want to get out of here, but the only way I'm going to is if we do it their way, and I just hope that you'll do what they say, Dad, and just do it quickly. I've been stopping and starting this tape myself so that I can collect my thoughts. That's why there's so many stops in it. I'm not being forced to say any of this. I think it's really important that you take their request very seriously about not arresting any other SLA members. And about following their good faith request to the letter. The SLA is is very interested in seeing how you're taking this, Dad, and they want to make sure that you are really serious and listening to what they're saying. And they think that you've been taking this whole thing a lot more seriously than the police and the FBI and other federal people have been taking it. And it seems to be getting to the point where they're not worried about you so much as they're worrying about other people, or at least I am. The SLA people really have been honest with me, and I really, I feel pretty sure that I'm going to get out of here if everything goes the way they want it to. And I think you should feel that way too. And try not to worry so much. I know it's hard, but I'm here because I'm a member of a ruling class family. And I think you can begin to see the analogy that the people in the two men in San Quentin are being held and are going to be tried simply because they are members of the SLA and not because they've done anything. Witnesses to the shooting of Foster saw black men and two white men have been arrested for this. You're being told this so that you'll understand why I was kidnapped. And so that you'll understand that whatever happens to the two prisoners is going to happen to me. You have to understand that I am held to be innocent the same way that two men in San Quentin are innocent. That they are simply members of a group and had not actually done anything themselves to warrant their arrest. They apparently were part of an intelligence unit and have never executed anyone themselves. The SLA has declared war against the government, and it's important that you understand that they know what they're doing and that they understand what their actions mean. And that you realize that this is not considered by them to be just a simple kidnapping. And that you don't treat it that way and say, oh, well, I don't know why she was taken. I mean, I'm telling you now why this happened so that you'll know and so that you'll have something to use, some knowledge to try to get me out of here. If you can get the food thing organized before the 19th, then that's okay, and it would just speed up my release. Today's Friday the 8th, and in Kuwait, the commandos negotiated the release of their hostages, and they left the country. Bye.
Randolph Hearst replied that he wouldn't be able to donate the food because it would cost more than $10 million and was beyond his budget. He said he would make an acceptable counteroffer within 24 hours. Donald told Patty that this meant that her father cared more about money than her life. Less than 24 hours later, a counteroffer was made. The Hearst Company would donate $4 million in food if Patty Hearst was released unharmed. Donald would not accept. He thought that once she was free, the negotiated donation would end. On February 16th, a new tape was sent to the same radio station.
Dad, Mom, I'm making this tape to let you know that I'm still okay and to explain a few things, I hope. First, about the good faith gesture, there was some misunderstanding about that, and you should just do what you can. I mean, they understand that you want to meet their demands, and that they had every intention that you should be able to meet their demands. They weren't trying to present an unreasonable request. It was never intended that you feed the whole state. So whatever you come up with basically is okay. And just do it as fast as you can, and everything will be fine. But the SLA is really mad about the certain attempts to make receiving the food be, receiving goods that have been, gotten by extortion. And they don't want people to be harassed by the police or by anybody else. And, I hope you can do something about that. And if you can't, well, I mean, they'll do something about it. So... But you shouldn't worry about that too much.
Weeks passed and negotiations continued, but they could not agree on a ransom. During this period, Patty seems to have been brainwashed by Donald. He told her that the FBI was getting close to them to try to rescue her. He said that they would come with guns, tear gas, but it was very likely that she would be killed by the FBI so that they could blame her death on the SLA. They want the people to hate the revolutionaries. If she died, the government would win. They told her that while they would not set her free, they would let her defend herself. She would be given a gun and taught to shoot. Patty no longer wore a blindfold. She became close to her kidnappers, understanding their ideology, and ended up in some way allied with them.
Hey, você se interessa por crimes reais, serial killers, coisas macabras e tem um senso de humor um tanto quanto sórdido? Se sim, você não está sozinho.
Se você precisa de um lugar recheado de pessoas como você, venha conhecer o podcast Pátria Amada Criminal.
Todas as semanas tentamos entender o pior da humanidade.
Nesse processo a gente ri, chora, fica brava, fofoca. Porque afinal de contas é assim que a gente fala quando está entre amigos.
Suas novas melhores amigas trevosas estão aqui no Pátria Amada Criminal.
2 months later, A photo of Patty holding a gun in front of the symbol of the Symbionese Liberation Army circulated along with a new recording of her, which was played on the radio. It was another long recording where she said she was not forced into anything, nor had she been brainwashed, drugged, tortured, hypnotized, anything. At some point, she'd been given the option of being freed or joining the forces of the SLA and fighting for their freedom. She said that she chose to stay. The Patty everybody knew no longer existed. Her name was now Tanya. 1 week after this news on April 15th, any doubts about this story were quashed. Patty was caught on camera taking part in a robbery at the Hibernia Bank, together with her new companions. The crime ended with some of the hostages being shot and two people were killed. On April 22nd, the SLA released a communique about the robbery, and Patty spoke about the event.
Greetings to the people. This is Tanya. On April 15th, my comrades and I expropriated $10,660.02 from the Sunset branch of the Hibernia Bank. Casualties could have been avoided had the persons involved cooperated with the people's forces and kept out of the way until after our departure. I was positioned so that I could hold customers and bank personnel who were on the floor. My gun was loaded, and at no time did any of my comrades intentionally point their guns at me. Careful examination of the photographs, which were published, clearly shows this is true. Our action of April 15th forced the corporate state to help finance the revolution. As for my ex-fiancé, I don't care if I ever see him again. During the last few months, Stephen has shown himself to be a sexist, ageist pig. Not that this was a sudden change from the way he always was. For those people who still believe that I'm brainwashed or dead, I see no reason to further defend my position. Consciousness is terrifying to the ruling class, and they will do anything to discredit people who have realized that the only alternative to freedom is death, and that the only way we can free ourselves of this fascist dictatorship is by fighting, not with words, but with guns. I am a soldier in the people's army. Patria o muerte, venceremos.
Patty was considered to be suffering from Stockholm Syndrome, which was a study published just 8 months earlier, when the famous Norrmalmstorg robbery took place in Stockholm, the capital of Sweden. Victims defended their captors even after 6 days of imprisonment. This syndrome was classified as a psychological state in which a person subjected to a prolonged period of intimidation begins to sympathize with and even love their kidnapper. There is also the possibility that some victims of harassment may develop an irrational, unconscious defense mechanism. This is believed to be an attempt to project affective feelings onto their kidnapper or abuser, to assuage or negotiate some type of agreement between the victim and aggressor, with the aim of reducing tension between those involved. On May 16th, Patty accompanied group members William and Emily Harris to a downtown store. She stayed in the car while they went shopping for some clothes. However, once in the store, the couple decided to steal some items but were observed by the manager. Outside, the manager confronted them. As the employee attempted to restrain them, a gun fell from William's waist. Seeing this, Patty discharged her firearm several times. The couple managed to get into the car and they fled. On the 19th, the police identified the group's hiding place and they set up an ambush to catch them. However, the intention was not to arrest them, but to exterminate them, since according to reliable information, Patty was not there. Shots, bombs, and a lot of fire were thrown, which resulted in the death of 6 SLA members. On June 7th, a new recording was sent to radio station KPFK.
I want to talk about the way I knew our 6 murdered comrades, because the fascist pig media has, of course, been painting a typically distorted picture of these beautiful sisters and brothers. Sim Q loved the people with tenderness and respect. He helped me see that it's not how long we live that's important. It's how we live. Jelena was beautiful. She exploded with the desire to kill the pig. She taught me how to fight the enemy within through her constant struggle with bourgeois conditioning. Gabi practiced until her shotgun was an extension of her right and left arms. She taught me the patience and discipline necessary for survival and victory. Zoya, female gorilla, perfect love and perfect hate reflected in stone-cold eyes. Faiza was a beautiful sister who taught me to shoot first and make sure the pig is dead before splitting, and I'll always love her. Cujo was the gentlest, most beautiful man I've ever known. Neither Cujo or I had ever loved an individual the way we loved each other. Our relationship foundation was our commitment to the struggle and our love for the people. It's because of this that I still feel strong and determined to fight. Our comrades didn't die in vain. The pig lies about the advisability of surrender have only made me more determined. I renounced my class privilege when Sin and Cujo gave me the name Tanya. While I have no death wish, I have never been afraid of death. For this reason, the brainwashed duress theory of the pig hearse has always amused me. Life is very precious to me, but I have no delusions that going to prison will keep me alive. And I would never choose to live the rest of my life surrounded by pigs like the Hearsts. Death to the fascist insect that preys upon the life of the people.
On September 18th of the following year, 1975, following an in-depth investigation, Patty was located in an apartment in San Francisco and arrested along with other group members. She weighed 40 kilos, and in prison, she exhibited several signs of trauma. Her IQ had dropped from 130 to 112. There were huge memory lapses in relation to pre-Tanya's life. She started smoking and complained of nightmares. Her lawyers claimed that Patty had been brainwashed, but this was not accepted by the court, and she was held fully responsible for her actions. She had even been involved in a romantic relationship with the group leader, but she insisted that she had been forced into this relationship. The trial hearings lasted 6 months and were presided over by Judge Oliver Jesse Carter. On March 20th, 1976, the last day of the trial, Patty was convicted of bank robbery and the discharge of a firearm during criminal activity. She received the maximum sentence of 35 years. The victim, who had become a criminal, turned people's feelings of concern to indignation. After the conviction, the population felt relief and knew that justice was being served. But it appears that the family's influence on the American government somehow interfered with the trial decision. 22 months into her sentence, President Jimmy Carter reduced Patty's sentence from 35 years to 22 months, and she was immediately released. But despite being free, she had lost her civil rights, which meant she was unable to work, and there were legal complications when leaving the country. She was free from prison, but as a citizen, she was still confined to the state. 2 months after her release, Patty Hearst married Bernard Lee Shaw, a police officer who was a member of her personal security team. In 2001, over 20 years later, President Bill Clinton granted her an official pardon, and at the age of 46, she regained all her rights. In 2018, at the age of 64, CNN made the documentary The Radical Story of Patty Hearst, with the aim of revisiting her story. But Patty released a statement denouncing the project. She said, It's no secret that I was kidnapped, sexually abused, and tortured at the age of 19. What followed was a series of events that were a direct result of the destruction of a child, inside and out. As difficult as it may seem, I have become a proud woman, mother and grandmother, and have no interest in reliving such a violent and painful time in my life. However, she had not spoken out against the release of films and documentaries prior to this one. Like the ordeal of Patty Hearst from 1979, Patty Hearst from 1988, or Gorilla, the taking of Patty Hearst from 2004. Today, at 70 years old, Patty Hearst is free.
Hey, você se interessa por crimes reais, serial killers, coisas macabras e tem um senso de humor um tanto quanto sórdido? Se sim, você não está sozinho.
Se você precisa de um lugar recheado de pessoas como você, venha conhecer o podcast Pátria Amada Criminal.
Todas as semanas tentamos entender o pior da humanidade.
Nesse processo a gente ri, chora, fica brava, fofoca, porque afinal de contas é assim que a gente fala quando está entre amigos.
Suas novas melhores amigas trevosas estão aqui, no Pátria Amada Criminal.